Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and this is The Takeaway.
Там были враги.
I hope we will win soon. The war will end and we come home again.
I'm still scared. I'm still afraid that I can't see her anymore.
2 million people have fled Ukraine since Russia invaded 2 weeks ago. The UN's High Commissioner for Refugees has praised the response from Poland, Romania, and Hungary, where Ukrainians have fled in search of safety from the relentless attacks. But he also acknowledged the horror of what the people themselves are experiencing.
They are, above all, frightened, traumatized. These are people that until just a few days ago had a perfectly normal life, and in a matter of hours, everything is thrown apart.
Now, many global humanitarian organizations in neighboring nations have tried to aid those still in Ukraine, but they're struggling to employ the normal channels because ports are blocked and roads compromised by bombings. The Kremlin offered to create so-called humanitarian corridors for civilians to safely leave Ukraine, but mainly they allowed pathways leading to Russia and their ally, Belarus. And as of today, both Ukrainian officials and the Red Cross have cited danger, including mines, along the only routes that lead to other parts of Ukraine. And according to the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, more than 400 civilians have been killed in Ukraine and over 800 injured since the Russian invasion began. On Monday, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki addressed the situation.
It's heart-wrenching to watch, you know, and I think for us who are working in public service, you watch in these moments and there are limitations in the sense that we are not going to send U.S. troops to fight in Ukraine against Russia. The president is not going to do that. That is what you have to weigh as president of the United States.
For more on this, we're joined now by Adam Keen, Director of Complex Emergencies at the global nonprofit AmeriCares. He's joining us from Poland. Adam, it's great to have you here.
Thanks. Great to be with you.
So we are not, as we heard from Jen Psaki, America is not going to send troops. This means that what we have left to address this crisis is the humanitarian work of organizations like your own. Can you tell us what you've been witnessing and experiencing on the ground in Poland?
Sure. Well, I'm based here in Krakow at the moment in eastern Poland, about 2.5 hour drive to the border. And we've been down there a number of times, my team and I, and have seen some of those 2 million refugees that you mentioned in the opening, crossing over the border, many in cars and buses, on trains, many also on foot. In fact, we were told by someone last night at the border crossing that there are more and more of the refugees coming now by foot than by car, because those who had the resources to leave with cars and in other modes of transportation have already done so. And those who are crossing now are those with less means and less ability to travel safely.
It's International Women's Day, and always in refugee crises, women and children tend to bear the brunt. But this is particularly true in this crisis, given that so many young men are staying behind to fight. Can you talk to me about the specific needs that women and children will have as just sort of shocking immediate refugees in this moment?
Well, absolutely. As AmeriCares is a health-focused organization, and among the needs that we're seeing among the refugees coming across are a combination of physical ailments that they've suffered from prior to the outbreak of hostilities, and so chronic health conditions like hypertension, diabetes, and other illnesses. We haven't really seen many war, if any, war casualties coming across the borders at all, but they are often dehydrated. There's a lack of water for people coming across the border. And all of that is complicated by the psychological trauma that they've experienced witnessing their neighborhoods, their homes destroyed in the war. And the combination of these psychological stressors and their physical ailments creates a really terrible situation. And AmeriCares is working to address both aspects of their health, their mental and their physical health.
Can you say a few more words about chronic conditions? I've been thinking a lot about this in recent days for folks who regularly take, you know, diabetes medication or possibly even psychological medications that help keep people stabilized. All kinds of things that we on a daily basis simply take for granted that you can go to your pharmacy and pick up, even if it's expensive, right? At least there's access to it. And I'm wondering what it means, for example, if you have, particularly if you've walked across a border, to have not had access to that medication for days.
Well, absolutely. It's extremely dangerous, especially for those who suffer from certain conditions that require ongoing regular medication. We have a shipment of 3 tons of medicine and supplies that are on their way to Ukraine right now with the support of a Ukrainian-American NGO. And so that includes prescription medications of various sorts, as well as over-the-counter medications and other kinds of health supplies that people need. Getting the right prescription for the person's particular needs is a challenge in the best of circumstances. And that's, of course, much more difficult in a situation like this. But AmeriCares and the Polish government, for that matter, and many other nonprofit organizations are helping through the provision of medications, making them available and administering them when needed.
I've been struck to hear so many who've had the opportunity to tell at least part of their stories to talk about the sleeplessness, that it has sometimes been 5 days, 10 days, going on 2 weeks since they've had what they describe as restful sleep, as more than just a few hours at a time. I'm wondering, I know this seems very basic, but when folks finally make it to safety across that Western border into Poland, into these other nations, is there a way for them to rest safely, or is it still not safe at the borders?
The border areas are quite safe. Once people get into Ukraine, you can see the relief on their faces, although at the same time, you can see in their eyes the anxiety, the emotion of leaving their homes and their countries. But yes, I saw in the train station in the border crossing town of Shemshil, where trains are taking refugees further west into Europe, people stretched out just on the floor. Cots were set up in some places as well for people to rest and sleep, but it's crowded, it's noisy, and so it's not by any means an ideal situation. But for people who've been traveling for days, often on foot, in very cold weather, to come into a nice warm train station, you know, can feel very comforting. And so, yes, authorities and others providing support are acutely aware of the importance of getting rest, and people are able to get that. Although when we were driving just from the border to Krakow, we saw many, many vehicles with Ukrainian plates, including one. And I glanced over and the driver was a man with his family in a heavily laden car. And he just looked exhausted, just sort of humped over the steering wheel, ashen faced and just exhausted.
How has your past work in other refugee crises informed the work that you're doing now?
You know, the refugees, wherever they are, suffer from some of the same traumatic experiences. Whether you're losing your home in Syria or your home in Ukraine, you know, Myanmar or anywhere else, in many ways, the psychological impact of being displaced and pushed away, in this case, violently, from where you've grown up, the people you know and love, and your life is extremely disruptive and unsettling in the extreme. So one of the things we learned in Syria is the importance that I referenced earlier of combining interventions that deal with both mental health and the chronic or other health conditions, physical health conditions that they're dealing with, because we actually conducted a short research study in among Syrian refugees in bordering countries in Turkey and Lebanon, and found that those who received psychological counseling services also saw improvement in their diabetes and other chronic conditions. So it's extremely important to treat both, and that applies, you know, across refugee settings anywhere in the world.
So stop for me, even dive a little deeper with me on that point exactly. What does it mean to provide emergency psychological services. I mean, I suppose when I hear you talk about counseling, I think of sort of, you know, long-term talk therapy, you know, once a week kinds of things. And it's hard for me to imagine that in this particular crisis context.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's actually a field of work called psychological first aid, whereby basically what people are doing is listening to the refugees. It's not a therapeutic intervention, and it's not a treatment per se. It's an opportunity for someone who's been suffering from some kind of psychological trauma to share their experience with a sympathetic listener who can provide emotional support and, as needed, can refer them to further treatment. And so that's what psychological first aid is about. It's a sort of addressing the acute trauma psychologically that people are dealing with, which enables them to basically get on with their lives and try to address the other issues that are very pressing as well. Where are they going to live? Where are they going to find food and water? What about work? What about my family and friends I've left behind? It's a very complex emergency, and the effect on that is complex on people's bodies and minds and spirits.
Can you speak for a moment about how children react in moments like this, and particularly what we might be expecting to see relative to children's health in the long term? So even if they are able to get to safety, are not in immediate danger, you know, from the bombing, from the shelling, what are some of the potential long-term consequences physiologically and psychologically for young people living through this?
Sure. Well, I'm not a technical specialist in this area exactly, but I do know that somebody said once that all wars are a war on the child. And that's extremely clear now when you see children's innocence almost torn away from them. And, you know, at the same time that I at the train station I was at in Shemshul the other day, that you see a child feeling, looking somewhat relaxed and smiling in relief to be in a warm, you know, safe environment with food and water. You can also see in their eyes the kind of confusion. And I think that it's that uncertainty that underlies a refugee situation that really plays on the minds of young people in particular.
Are there ways that those who are feeling helpless in this moment, who are much more than 2.5 hour drive from the border, is there a way for the people who live in communities as far flung as the United States to be helpful?
Well, I think that Ukrainians are fully aware of the global support that this conflict seems to have inspired on their behalf. And, you know, that in itself is heartening, I think, for people who've been pushed out of their country. So lending your support in any way you can to that through participation in demonstrations and so on, and advocacy with our government to provide additional support. Of course, AmeriCares and other NGOs are also eager to do more. And at AmeriCares.org, your listeners can learn more about what we're doing and make contributions to the cause.
Adam Keene is the Director of Complex Emergencies at the global nonprofit AmeriCares. Adam, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Melissa.